From the language app Babbel, this is Multilinguish. I'm David Duchin. In school, around linguistically nitpicky adults and in formal settings, many of us were taught that in order to sound more eloquent, we should avoid as many of these stuttering and stalling words as possible. But what if they were actually totally, normal? Turns out we all use these filler words more than we realize, even us here at Babbel.
In like the 60s, there were a lot of like really, really, you know, like most supermodels were like French or like, you know, from Europe.
I think maybe it's because I think of like American English and how there's like different like dialects or like how they're Southern or like there's people from the Midwest.
Yeah, I took a trip to Paris a couple summers ago and I try to have like these phrases learned just so I could interact, you know, basic communication type stuff with different establishments.
So even in our recorded videos and podcast episodes, you can hear that we subconsciously use like, and you know, more than we'd like to think that we are when we're actually talking. But that's the thing. No matter how much we try to stop ourselves from using these stalling words, they tend to make their way back into our speech, maybe even if we don't want them to. This episode of Multilinguish is about filler words. First, we'll explore some of the linguistic science behind why we use filler words like these and what they are. And then after the break, we'll see just how universal and utilized they are in languages foreign and familiar to us. Before we get started, don't forget to rate and review Multilinguish wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Joining me today is content producer Steph Koisman. Hi, Steph.
Hi, David.
So you and I have both written for Babbel Magazine about this exact topic. I figured you'd be a great guest for this episode.
Oh, thank you.
Of course, yeah. What do you think of when I say filler words or stalling words? What types of words are we talking about, and what types of people do you typically think of using them, and in what situations?
Well, honestly, I think all kinds of people use them. I mean, I think the stereotype is that you have like a California mall girl who says like a lot. But as you mentioned before, I mean, it's something that shows up in literally every language. And I think that there might be more generational inflections where certain age groups of people use or like lean towards one type of filler word more than another. But it's kind of just a feature of how people talk.
Yeah, I would agree. I think if you pay close enough attention to the speech of most people in your life, you could pick out maybe not the same exact filler words. I think everyone takes their own sort of spin on it, but we all use them. I mean, probably using them right now without even realizing in this more formal podcast situation. I know in my life I've been called out for using filler words like or like so many times. I mean, I'm thinking back to high school when I was in the mock trial team. So that's a very formal setting where you're presenting a case in front of, you know, these real professional judges and everyone who's watching you. And you want to make sure you come off as confident and that you know exactly what you're saying. And if you say words like, like, if you're kind of scrambling to find your thoughts, it can come off as unprepared. There I go saying, you know, it's harder to notice when you're not paying attention, but when you start to tune in, you start to think, oh my gosh, this is such a prevalent thing that I do is filling time and space in my speech with words that are generally frowned upon in these more formalized contexts, you know?
Yeah.
Do you have any personal experiences with using filler words or insights into maybe how you use them?
And I've definitely been called out for using them too much. My parents get on my case all the time. And it wasn't actually until I got into podcasting that I started to get kind of like feedback from, I mean, this has happened like all of two times in my life, but I think it's noteworthy. One of the very first podcast episodes I ever appeared on was my friend's podcast. And I had a stranger slide into my DMs with like a kind of like a mean criticism sandwich, like wrapped in two compliments. And it was so passive aggressive and unnecessary. But she was basically like, I loved your podcast. Just wanted to let you know that you said like so many times that I had to stop listening after like 6 minutes and I couldn't even listen to you talk. But figured you'd want to know because we all love to improve. And it was just, I don't know. Why are people like that?
That sounds so unnecessary. That would make me so self-conscious and I would never be able to forget something like that.
Yeah. Well, it also you could tell that she was just like angry at me for talking like that, but she didn't want to make it sound mean and it just ended up sounding worse. But there was also, I think here on Multilinguish, we got like a rating right after one of my episodes dropped and the feedback was like, says like too much. And it didn't say who, but I was like, I know that's about me.
Well, we I think we're all used to being called out in some form or fashion for using words like these filler words, these stalling words that to us, we don't even try to use. Like I've been saying, it's not something that I'm consciously choosing to do. And I wouldn't want to annoy someone if I'm talking on a podcast and they hear me say like, or they hear me say, that's not intentional. But I think it speaks to something about the way that we formulate thoughts and the way we convey ideas and express ourselves is that sometimes we depend on these words because we're making it up as we go and we're being more spontaneous and we need a little bit more cushion. You know, mm-hmm. we aren't ready to just come out with an idea off the bat. We need a little bit of extra padding to get our ideas out there. And that to me seems totally normal. I feel like most people would agree.
Yeah, but, no. I've been kind of thinking about how like there's this weird balance that you need to strike, because if you completely scrubbed your speech of filler words, it would sound really unnatural and like you were just like reading off a page. But then if you use them too much, people get mad at you and like they find it overly distracting. So like I wonder if it's one of those things where we all kind of sometimes you dislike things about other people that you know are true about yourself. So it's like we all use these words, and why is it that we find it so grating in other people?
Yeah, I think it's textbook projection.
Yeah,
where we can't accept that maybe we're flawed in X, Y, or Z way, and we also judge people who use filler words, for example, one of many examples of a reason we might project. And this isn't supposed to be a psychology podcast, but I think it's a really good point you bring up, where we're all taught in school in really formal settings to avoid these words as much as possible. So we kind of have this conditioning to judge people when they use them. And that includes ourselves, whether we know that we're doing it, but it makes it easy to kind of point to someone else and say, oh, you're not following this very strict societal rule mm-hmm. that we're all supposed to know. And so therefore I feel an obligation to put you down or to call you out for it. When in reality, maybe if I'm the one calling you out, Steph, maybe I'm using filler words just as much, but it's just not a sort of situation where I'm tuned into it as much. And I want you to feel lesser than so that I can feel better than. And this gets into a whole other can of worms about, you know, societal dynamics and how language kind of plays into people's relationships, and we could talk extensively about
that. I don't know. I wonder if because so many of us were subjected to the grammar police as children that we then kind of want to become grammar police for other people.
Yeah, maybe it gives us a sense of power too.
Could be.
Well, I think it's important for us to kind of talk about the science behind these filler words so that you and I and our audience can get a better context for what they are and why they're actually not that crazy, why they're not abnormal, why we shouldn't necessarily feel the need to call them out, because they actually might be, as we'll learn, a really helpful part of conversation that we don't want to do without. So I'll start off by saying that back in the day, you know, decades ago, there was a school of linguists who believed that these filler words are kind of nothing more than just verbal disfluencies, as Noam Chomsky would call them. He would also say that they were maybe errors in applying knowledge of language or what you want to say into actual conversation, actual performance. So it's like something's getting caught or mixed up between the thought of what you want to say and your production of that very thought, which makes sense. I mean, we kind of view stalling as maybe like a brain fart or like a mind flub, which makes a lot of sense when we're confused, when we're trying to come up with the right thought. Our brain isn't really working at 100% capacity. But there are other scientists who are saying, wait, that might not be the whole story. It's not just that these verbal disfluencies are errors or mistakes, but they actually serve a really important and essential role in conversation. So I'm going to bring up a few different areas of research from a couple different professors of psychology and linguistics who have a lot to say about this exact topic. And feel free to stop me if you have questions or you have something you want to chime in, because you've also written a lot about this for Babbel magazine. So there are two psychology professors, Gene Foxtree of University of California, Santa Cruz, and Herbert Clark of Stanford University, who think that these stalling words like, like, you know, carry much more meaning than the other old school linguists give them credit for. So they refer to them as conversation managers that serve as important placeholders and listening cues for conversations. So they're kind of, their theme is that these stalling words kind of regulate the flow of conversation. So instead of me having to indicate to you that, hey, Steph, I'm done talking, it's your turn to talk, because conversation is a very symbiotic sort of relationship. It depends on your knowing when to start talking, and that also depends on you knowing when I'm done talking. That's why filler words come in and play such an important role. It's that when I'm not done speaking, maybe I haven't really formulated my thought entirely, but I know that my turn's not finished and I want to indicate that to you.
Right, that's right.
What I'm going to use. Throw out a word like or or maybe even draw out the vowel in a word that I'm saying. So if I'm doing something like, well, I'm talking.
It's kind of like when someone's texting you and the little speech bubble pops up and you can see that they're typing.
Yeah, and it's a great way to know, okay, it's not quite my turn yet. I could say something, but that might be interrupting. I want to make sure that the person I'm talking to has the full space to kind of get their thought out.
Yeah.
So this is the other school of thought, that these conversation managers, these stalling words that we would otherwise maybe dismiss, are really, really important. So if we look at some of the quantitative data behind this research, we could learn a lot more about just how prevalent these filler words are. So I mentioned Herbert Clark of Stanford University, and some of his research says that it's pretty natural to become stuck mid-sentence while you're speaking. If you look at the fact that we produce on average between 120 and 150 words per minute. So that's about 2 to 2.5 words per second during a normal conversation. At that rate, it's probably only natural that we experience a few stops and starts. We're speaking really, really quickly. And we all know our brain sometimes has a hard time keeping up with our speech and vice versa, but it's not a one-to-one match. And as I'm sure we all know.
Yeah. And I kind of feel like it kind of buys you some time as a speaker, and also for your listener, it kind of gives your listener a chance to catch up and process what you're saying. If that makes sense. Like, I feel like the people who speak well have mastered the art of the dramatic pause to kind of let their words sink in a little bit more, but not all of us are that sophisticated, so we use filler words instead.
Yeah, we can't all be great orators, but in the meantime, we can signal, hey, I'm still thinking about what I want to say. If you'll give me the chance to say it and let me keep the spotlight on me during this conversation for this one turn,
right,
maybe I'll come up with something really great that'll keep this conversation moving forward. I mean, that's just how conversation works, and we don't even think about it like that. It kind of just happens.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the best arguments for making the claim that these filler words are pretty natural and pretty normal, is that we all use them without realizing, and we've all had extremely successful conversations, however you measure success, but I would say that most conversations I have, of course, use filler words, and they get from point A to point B. You know, I'm still able to have a really productive discussion with someone, even if my mind is racing a mile a minute and I have all these thoughts that I want to get out. I'm able to do it, and I'm also able to help regulate the flow of conversation using these filler words as well.
Yeah, and if you think about it, I mean, it's not like we write seamlessly either. We pause and we think about what word we want to use, and it, you know, I feel like we don't ever produce language in a way that's completely seamless, even if you don't hear the sort of thought process that goes into it.
I totally agree. Writing is an interesting point because it does let us stop and really think about what we want to say.
Yeah.
But you mentioned texting earlier. When I see someone texting really fast and that speech bubble or that typing bubble comes up, that means that it's kind of like a conversation. I'm waiting for them to finish their turn. I know that there's some sort of indicator that the conversation hasn't turned to me yet. Mm-hmm. And in writing, that is this text bubble that pops up that can cause anxiety. If we think that someone's going to say something, we've all been in those conversations where it's kind of tense and we're waiting for someone to get out what they have to say. And we're waiting on that typing bubble to turn into an actual bubble. And that kind of reflects what a conversation, a spoken conversation is like to me.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to tell you another piece of data and tell me what you think of it. There's a linguist named Mark Lieberman from the University of Pennsylvania who estimates that between 6 and 10% of our natural speech is filler words alone. And that seems like a lot to me.
That seems low, honestly, but
well, yeah. That's like anywhere between 1 in 20-ish to 1 in 10 words that we speak. And now I'm starting to think, okay, I'm starting to really tune into my own speech and think, is that true? Do I do that much? But I think that could be really, really true. I don't know. For every person, it's probably different. But when you hear a stat like that, it makes you think, okay, these filler words are way more prevalent than we give them credit for. We tend to only give weight to words of substance, or what we would classify as words of substance. But filler words are so, so prevalent, and they really are peppered throughout our speech, maybe more than we realize.
Yeah.
So there's another professor of linguistics at the University of Sydney over in Australia who wrote a book called How We Talk, The Inner Workings of Conversation. And he calls these filler or stalling words, quote, traffic signals that regulate the flow of social interaction. And I think that's a really good way. Yeah, I think that's a really great way to capture kind of what we've been talking about. It's like we're having a conversation. I'm speaking. I can't quite get to the point yet, but I know that I will, because conversation is a spontaneous process and it's improvised in a lot of cases. And so we both have this understanding that beyond the substance of what we're saying, there's kind of this infrastructure to conversation that we want to go as smoothly as possible. And so it's this interdependent process where we both have to depend on each other to make it successful. And that's what filler words help us do. They create the space for us to take turns productively and really convey and express our thoughts.
Yeah.
Okay, so before we go to the break, let's try to think of a couple of contexts in which we use filler words and see them a lot. And then on the other side of the coin, contexts in which we don't see them a lot, and where we are told to try to avoid them too, by teachers, by adults, by society, whatever. So what do you think of when you think of situations where we might hear these filler words, like one thing we've been talking a lot about is spontaneous speech, conversation, mm-hmm. that's unrehearsed, where we're not exactly sure where we're going when we start talking, but we get there eventually.
Yeah, I mean, basically anytime you're asking someone to speak off the cuff, I think you're going to wind up in a situation where that kind of more natural sounding speech comes out.
I agree. I think it's also probably more prevalent around groups of similarly aged peers, especially young people. Mm. I mean, that might just be a stereotype, but I think it's a stereotype for a reason.
That's true. I feel like there is something kind of inherently relaxed about speaking with filler words, and in a relaxed setting, like when you're among your friends, versus you might try to sound a little bit more buttoned up around your boss, for instance.
So that's a great point. Situations where you need to kind of be more composed, mm-hmm. or stoic, those tend to call for rooting out or eradicating as many filler words as you can. So when someone wants to project confidence or project that they know what they're doing, project preparation, for example, then that's a perfect instance where we would see people trying to maybe monitor their speech.
Yeah.
So I think we've done a really good job of identifying the situations in which we see a lot of filler words, and talking about what they are and what they mean and why they actually serve potentially a linguistic purpose beyond just representing some sort of error in thought to speech production, something like that. Because there's a lot of science that points to the idea that these filler words are way more common than we think they are, and that they serve a purpose, that we can't actually have meaningful conversations without them in most situations. So we're going to head to a break, but when we come back, we'll talk about filler words in other languages that we are familiar with, maybe, or ones that we've never heard. But we'll see that there are implications for speakers of all languages worldwide when it comes to filler words. We'll return shortly.
Hey, it's Dylan. Multilinguish is brought to you by Babbel, the language app. Our marketing team wants you to know that Babbel teaches you 14 languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, Russian, and more. And the app's created by real language teachers. You'll learn how to have conversations in real life situations, like getting to know your neighbors, or maybe telling them to put on their mask and stay 6 feet away from you. Either way, we're offering Multilinguish listeners 50% off a 3-month subscription. New customers can get this offer by visiting babbel.com/podcast. That's babbel.com/podcast. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Multilinguish. So we've been talking exclusively about filler words in English, but we can't ignore the vast world of filler words in languages across the world and what they have to teach us about the nature of how we talk. So it turns out, you might not be surprised, or maybe you are, but turns out that almost every world language has these filler words, these discourse markers, verbal disfluencies, conversation managers, whatever you want to call them. It's clear that they're a linguistic universal. And we'll show you some examples, or play for you some examples, of people speaking different languages, having a hard time finding their thoughts, or maybe stalling a bit. But there's something we see across all or almost all languages in the world. So the question for us is, what does that tell us about the purpose and prevalence of these words and how maybe they're stigmatized in our society? But as English speakers, we don't really carry a unique burden in using these words and maybe being called out for them, because it seems like they actually are more of a universal than we might think. So I'm going to play some clips for you from the Babbel Media Universe. These are from our YouTube videos, from our Facebook Lives, but these are all people who either work for Babbel or were in videos created by Babbel, and they're speaking 3 different languages, and try to see if you can pick out certain ways that they maybe stall or try to fill time with filler words or noises. So the first one we'll start with is Italian.
Le mie aspettative non sono altissime per il semplice fatto che l'italiano è una lingua molto difficile e impararla in 3 settimane è una missione. Però vedremo come cosa ha imparato e cercherò di non fargliela pesare troppo.
So that was Italian. Now let's listen to German.
Und genau, wir haben ja gute und ein bisschen schlechte Nachrichten. Die guten Nachrichten sind, wir sind zurück und auf YouTube. Und die etwas schlechten sind, wir sind vorerst nur montags da, also wie jetzt heute, montags um 10. Und machen das erstmal nur einmal wöchentlich und schauen dann ein bisschen, wie sich das entwickelt. Und wie immer.
Okay, so that was German. And finally, let's listen to Spanish.
Dejar el primero es huir de una situación o de un lugar rápidamente. Y pues se usa coloquialmente en Venezuela para referirse a a eso, a huir, a escapar.
Okay, so that was three clips from three different languages. And if you noticed the same thing I did, what I heard most was the sort of elongated vowel, people saying they're finishing up saying one word, but they haven't quite figured out what the next thought they want to say is. So they kind of draw out the word before they get to the next thought. And there were a few, if you don't speak other languages, that's fine too, because I only really speak enough Spanish to pick up from the Spanish clip that I just played. But one thing that I heard was this word pues in Spanish, which means well, which, Steph, as you might know, because you wrote an article about filler words in other languages, is a really common stalling word in Spanish. And this is something that I, in the classroom, in college, heard all the time from professors or other students who needed a substitute for something like or well while they try to gather their thoughts. Pues, or even haber, means let's see in Spanish. And I remember I had an eighth grade Spanish teacher who would always say, a ver, a ver, a ver. And that, that reminded me of filler words in Spanish in my own experience. So sometimes, was there anything that stood?
I've definitely heard people use that just as like a standalone phrase too.
Yeah.
A ver.
Yeah. I think that that's a great point too. These phrases don't have to necessarily be, you know, embedded within a greater sentence or a greater expression. They could stand by themselves too. But one thing that I keep coming back to in the three clips that we heard were that these speakers all used or or in some form.
Yeah, I definitely picked up on that, the kind of.
Yeah, and that kind of just seems to me like a natural thinking noise. You know, we don't necessarily need language specific thinking sounds, because when you're confused or when you're lost for a thought, you make the sound or.
One of the things that I found the most interesting when I was writing about filler words in other languages is that other languages literally say like as well. Like in Italian and Portuguese, they say like tipo. I think Swedish has that too, where literally the word for like is used to kind of buy time when you're speaking. So I don't know if it's just one of those things that kind of cropped up organically at the same time in multiple languages, or if everyone's just copying English, if it's one of those kinds of like anglicisms.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I don't know the answer, but it is an interesting point you bring up, that a lot of languages have a very, very similarly functioning word for the English like. I'm looking through your article that you wrote, Steph, about filler words in other languages, and finding so many rich examples of words just like the ones you mentioned, like tipo in Italian. There's this word donc in French, which is kind of like so at the beginning or end of a sentence. There's a lot of parallels with, we know in English we say stuff like you know or you see. In French, that exists too. Tu vois, you see. And even in Dutch, I remember there's a phrase, weet je, you know. So it wouldn't surprise me if there's a lot of parallels between these phrases in English and other languages. And that is a good point. Maybe that means that like didn't come from English. Maybe it kind of cropped up simultaneously across world languages. Or maybe it did come from English and it kind of seeped its way into all these languages across the world. But that's a really, really good point that you bring up, that there are these parallels in languages. And I think that goes to show that there aren't really that many filler words separating us as speakers. We all kind of tend to make the same sounds. And even though we have linguistic variations that are unique to the languages we speak, I think we all use these filler words and stalling words, and that shows us something about who we are as people, who we are as speakers of languages, whatever they are, that we all share something in common.
Yeah.
So if you're curious about all these other filler words in other languages, I highly encourage you to check out Steph's article. It's called How to Stall and Instantly Sound More Fluent in 7 Different Languages. And we'll post it in the show notes so you can check it out. But also, Steph, one point that you make in this article that I wanted to get your insight on is how we tend to stigmatize using filler words in our own language, but could it actually be to your advantage to use one of these filler words in a different language? One of these more nuanced, like tipo in Italian or pues in Spanish or donc in French. What does that actually help you with? If you're trying to learn to speak another language, could it be in your best interest to actually use these filler words?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was actually kind of the whole sort of like the premise under which I collected these examples, was that you can actually learn to use filler words to sound more fluent, which sounds kind of like a contradiction to say that you would use disfluencies to sound more fluent. But I mean, it's just kind of the whole idea is that like there's a way that we think we're supposed to sound and there's the way that we sound. And if you want to sound fluent, then you should do your best to kind of mimic the sounds of natural speech as they exist. And that's sort of a moving target, right? Because language is constantly evolving. Because I feel like it's one of those things where you might know that, okay, so in Spanish, I can say pues, and it can sort of make me sound more like a native speaker. But then it might take some experience or time around native speakers to understand when it makes sense to say pues and when it doesn't. So that's also one of those things that kind of you perfect over time and kind of demonstrates that you've spent some time around people of that culture. I feel like on some level it makes you sound more like a native speaker, and it also kind of signals like an in-group understanding of the culture too.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think that it shows us that there's not so much that we need to be ashamed about when it comes to using filler words, because every language has them, or almost every language has them, as we see. And they're such an essential part of conversation in almost every language that using them makes us sound more authentic and more real. If we know the context that they come up in, and we're able to use them effectively, it could really make an impression on a native speaker and show that we are paying attention to more than just vocabulary and grammar, that we're actually tuned into the infrastructure of conversation in different languages itself. So that's a really great point that you bring up. Okay, before we wrap up, I wanted to actually share an anecdote with you and our listeners from my roommate and my friend James, who before this year was working in Spain in high schools with high school students as a part of a program through the Spanish government that actually put him in the middle of these groups of teenagers in classrooms. And he had a really interesting anecdote to share about these filler words in the classrooms that he noticed that were cropping up in Spain. So I'll let him share that story.
Hi, it's James, and I spent the last 2 years in Spain, in Madrid, teaching middle and high school English in public schools, and most of the classes were conducted in English, but I did hear a lot of Spanish among the students, and sometimes when they would ask questions or ask for clarification, they would address teachers in Spanish. So I was able to hear a lot of the phrases that they used, and one phrase that they used in particular was en plan. And the more I started to hear it, it was just everywhere. And plan. So I was wondering, what does it mean? And it basically just means in plan. So the students would say en plan all the time. And there was one teacher with whom I worked, Maria, who was really, really bothered by the students saying en plan. And the group that I think said it the most was like 8th grade, 9th grade. And there was a particular group of girls who just said en plan whenever they tried to articulate anything. And so this teacher, Maria, instituted a 3-strike rule, which stated that if you said en plan 3 times in a class, she would send you out for 5 minutes. And it might be questionable pedagogy, but the point is that she was so bothered by this phrase that these young students were saying, en plan. And so I asked her about why it bothered her so much. And she just said it was a generational thing, that people her age, I think she was in her late 30s, maybe early 40s, the filler that they used is Osea. And that was common in Madrid, but less so among high schoolers who were saying en plan.
So, Steph, what did you think about that story that James told?
I mean, it's just so kind of hilarious and totally validating of this idea that, like, we're not so different. Like, we all kind of have these experiences growing up.
Yeah, I agree. It makes me think, okay, for all that we like to rail on the youth of today for using words that maybe we don't understand or that kind of came out of nowhere, we were once in these positions too. And as English speakers, we're not alone either. It's happening all over the world, and it's not something that we can necessarily stop without a lot of intention. But the question is, do we actually need to try to stop it? Or is this just a natural kind of linguistic unfolding that has been happening for centuries or for millennia even, something that we should just embrace for what it is instead of really trying to root it out? So these are big questions that we don't have to answer right now, but we hope we got you thinking about filler words in English, the way that you use them, where they crop up, and how they actually might tell us about conversation and the way that we work in conversation. And we also hope that you learned a bit about filler words in other languages too. Of course, there's much more to be learned, and we want you to check out all the great resources that we have listed in the show notes as well. But we hope this was a great start, and we hope that we kind of told you a little bit about the linguistic humanity we all share because of the fact that filler words are so prevalent in all the languages we find across the world. But we'll leave you with that. And I just want to say thank you so much, Steph, for joining me today. It was a pleasure to have you.
Well, thank you for having me.
Multilinguish is a production of the language app Babbel. This episode was produced by me, David Duchin, with help from Steph Koisman. Editing and sound design was done by Brian Rosato. Special thanks to James Douglas for sharing a story with us. You can read about today's episode topic and more on Babbel Magazine. Just visit babbel.com/magazine. Say hi on social media by finding us at Babbel USA. Finally, please rate and review this podcast. We really appreciate it. Thank you.